Big news. One generous Marketplace fan, Dr. Joe Rush from Florida, is offering to match the next $50,000 in donations to Marketplace. And every single gift gets us closer to a critically important May fundraising goal. So please give right now and double your impact thanks to this generous match. Go to marketplace.org/donate. On the program today, why and how consumers and businesses are feeling so very differently about this economy. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Tuesday. Today, the 12th of September. Good as always to have you along, everybody. We started things off yesterday with Kristen Schwab telling us about consumers, how consumers are feeling specifically, which turns out to be, all in all, pretty positive. Today, businesses. And who boy is the story different there? The National Federation of Independent Business was out with its Small Business Optimism Index this morning. Not so much optimism. In August, for the 20th straight month, business owners scored their outlook as below average. In other words, they are mostly pessimistic about the future. How come? Here is Kristen Schwab one more time.
Do you know anyone who makes crushed sandwich cookies? Because Judy Harrell's looking for suppliers.
I've tried every distributor from here to Timbuktu.
Harrell needs them for her ice cream shop in Northampton, Massachusetts. She says she's still dealing with supply chain issues, so she's been driving nearly 2 hours each way to pick up cookies from the closest producer. Another item on her list, black raspberries, a key ingredient in many of her signature flavors. A few years ago, they cost about $2,000.
This year, it was over $6,000. We're talking about berries.
Prices have also gone up for milk, and it's not like she can just do without it. This is a key example of why consumers and businesses are experiencing inflation differently, because they're experiencing different slices of it.
So it depends what people are really buying.
David Audrich is a professor of entrepreneurship at Indiana University. He says businesses require specific goods and can't pivot as fast as consumers. Plus, consumers don't have to worry about the thing that businesses spend a lot of their money on.
You know, most of them, the labor is a big part of their bill.
That is, if they can hire. Aaron Calvo Bocci, who owns CB Stuffer, a wholesale and retail candy company, is down 10 employees. She says a lot of job candidates can't find childcare.
So I'm just working a lot more, which is fine because that's what I signed up for. It's just there's only so much that I can do myself.
On the upside, business is good.
Every week, we're gaining new accounts. The problem is the slower turnaround in getting our product out means a slower turnaround with getting paid.
Calvo Bocci says she's tired of the slog. The pandemic upended everything for businesses more than 3 years ago. And by now, she expected things to feel a little easier. I'm Kristen Schwab for Marketplace.
Lest you think we are ignoring the big Google antitrust trial, we are not. But it's going to be a long, long haul for this story in the news cycle, so we're pacing ourselves. Here, though, is the takeaway from day one of the antitrust trial of the century. Google says it's just better than everybody else at search. That's why so many of us use it. Here's the quote from opening statements. Consumers use Google, the company's lawyer said, because it delivers value to them, not because they have to. The Justice Department obviously disagrees. Alphabet shares on this Tuesday off about 1.1%, almost certainly not related to the trial. Just thought you might like to know. Elsewhere in equities, tech, as it turns out, led the way down. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Data source of the day today is the U.S. Census Bureau, one of the unsung heroes of economic data, truth be told. They were out with a whole slew of new information today about us and our financial well-being. Real median income, that's what a household earns adjusted for inflation, fell last year 2.3%. Poverty was way up. Inflation did play a part in that. But as Marketplace's Bree Benishore reports, there is more to it than just that.
One way the census measures how people are doing is by looking at the money they earn, their wages, their salaries, relative to one another. That tells a story about the economy.
It's how much inequality the market is generating.
Jenny Romick is director of the West Coast Poverty Center. You can also measure how people are doing after taxes, after benefits, after assistance programs.
The post-tax measure tells how much inequality people are experiencing.
The government publishes both, and they tell very different stories for 2022. In terms of what the economy is paying people, median income fell 2.3%. Inequality decreased for the first time since 2007, and the poverty rate didn't really change. But after taxes, after benefits, after government programs, real incomes fell almost 9%. Inequality increased, and the poverty rate exploded from 7.8% to 12.4%.
We saw big increases in poverty across every socio-demographic group.
Luke Schaefer is a professor of public policy at the University of Michigan.
The biggest was among children. So we saw child poverty more than double.
Behind these numbers is the unwinding of pandemic-era government benefits. The child tax credit, an expanded earned income tax credit, economic impact payments, those all went away. And without them, post-tax real incomes fell 14% for the lowest earners compared with 7% for the highest earners. Again, Jenny Romick.
We can reduce inequality. We can reduce child poverty. We briefly chose to, and then we reversed.
The post-tax poverty rate for Black Americans went from north of 18% down to 11% during the pandemic, only to rebound to about 17%. If you do not count the pandemic years, that is the lowest on record, but almost 50% higher than the poverty rate for white Americans. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore for Marketplace.
It is an absolute truism of reporting on this economy that you can talk about headlines and big picture statistics and trends and whatnot until the cows come home. But sometimes you just got to talk to regular people and ask them what's going on. Alana Furco is one of our regular people. She's the manager of Butte Plaza Mall in Butte, Montana. And when we got her on the phone this morning for one of our regular chats, I asked her about the economic vibe in her hometown.
Well, you know, people are feeling a pinch. They're definitely feeling a pinch. Rents are up. Our inventory for housing is low, but prices are up. The grocery store is pinching everybody, you know, and it feels real. Whereas, you know, the economy before Butte stayed pretty steady, but now we seem to be trending with what everybody else is doing, and we're all in the same boat. I guess we're all on the same river in different boats, I guess, is what they say.
Fair enough. Now, how do you see that reflected in what happens in the mall? Like, are your tenants doing as much business, do you think, as they used to?
My tenants, our businesses are actually doing very well. But, you know, as there are less options, you become a bigger fish in a smaller pond.
Sorry, less options, you mean fewer, you've got a higher vacancy rate, right? Fewer stores in the mall?
I do. Unfortunately, I'm losing my oldest mom and pop. They're retiring. Wow. Yeah, so that hurts. That there's a heartache there. So we're dealing with that reality.
What is your I'm sure you know this off the top of your head. What's your vacancy rate? How many, if you could rent everything tomorrow, how many stores would you be able to rent out?
Over 30.
Wow. That can't be good.
Yeah. It's hard. It's a reality. It's a very harsh reality.
Huh. And then when they come in, what kinds of things are they buying? I mean, it can't just be all walkers, right? Your famous walking crew that circles around that mall, right? It's got to be, what are they buying when they come in?
Well, our walkers are faithful. Yes, I've got fine jewelry. I've got a phenomenal ladies' clothing store. We have a Hallmark, Joanne Fabrics and Crafts. What we do have, and we have some food, and of course our theater. And what we do have, people are very good at patronizing, and I appreciate that, but it's not enough. I mean, they're going to put out the energy to come to the mall. We want it to be worth it.
How long have you been doing this?
I've been here 38 years, February.
Wow. Really?
Yep. Yep. 38 years in February.
None of my business, but how much longer are you going to do it?
Well, I just turned 59, and I've always said that I wanted to do 40 years here at the mall. So let's see how close I get.
Well, you know, on the theory that your boss is listening, you know, you could sign up for another 5 years right now.
I hope so. Well, I would. I would if I could. And if I can share,
yeah.
In July, there was an NPR listener and his wife stopped in for a visit. They've heard us visiting on your show, and Bob and Robin out of California were pulling their boat up to Flathead for an annual race, and they stopped in Butte to say hi.
That makes my day.
And it was phenomenal. And he was just such a good man. And Robin was out doing a little shopping, and he and I visited, and it made my day. So I really thank you for that opportunity. I mean, I've made friends and built a little support system of your listeners, and I appreciate you for that.
Well, I appreciate you too. Thanks for taking the time to talk to me all these years.
Oh, well, you know what? You've been a good visit.
There we go. Maybe I'll get up there one day. What do you think?
Well, and maybe I'll come your way as well.
Well, come in the wintertime. Weather's probably better here.
You know, right now our weather is phenomenal. I mean, it's low 50s when I wake up in the morning. We're not going past those mid-70s. It's perfect right now. You know, everybody had a wonky summer.
Yeah.
Hopefully we'll go into a mild winter.
Let's hope. Alana Furco, she runs and thinks about and has been at the Butte Plaza Mall in Butte, Montana for a very long time. Alana, thanks. We'll talk to you soon.
You take care, sir. I think of you often and always send a prayer your way when I do.
Thank you so much. Talk to you later.
Take care.
Coming up, yet another installment of our regular series, Things AI Can Do Better Than a Human Can.
Even I can't read millions of patents, but artificial intelligence probably can.
Yeah. First, though, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial's off 17 today, less than a 10%. We'll call it flat, 34,645. NASDAQ descended 144 points, a little more than 1%. Ended things at 13,773. The S&P 500 subtracted 25 points, almost 0.6%. 44.61. Apple, just cause, down 1.7% today. Marathon Oil pumped up 3.7%. ExxonMobil added 2.9%. Bernard Looney is out as the CEO of BP. The oil giant said he'd failed to disclose details of personal relationships with colleagues in the past. Shares added just under 1.1% today. Bond prices rose. Yield on the 10-year T-note fell 4.27%. You're listening to Marketplace.
My name is Lee Hawkins. I've been a journalist for over 25 years. On my new podcast, What Happened in Alabama, I get answers to some of the hardest questions about how things came to be for many Black Americans and the truth that must come before any reconciliation can happen. I investigate my family history, my upbringing in Minnesota, and my father's painful nightmares about growing up in Alabama. What Happened in Alabama is a new series confronting the cycles of trauma for myself, my family, and for many Black Americans. Listen now.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Jerez, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read,
Well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Apple held its semi-regular, hey, look at all the cool new gadgets you can pay us for, event today in Cupertino. New AirPods, a new watch, a couple of versions of the new iPhone 15 as well, a better camera, satellite connectivity. Also on that phone, perhaps the biggest change, a USB-C charging port is going to be standard instead of the proprietary Lightning connector that's been on iPhones for more than a decade now. Should you think somehow that Apple is standardizing things with the rest of technology all by itself? A law in the European Union actually requires mobile devices to be equipped with a common charging system by the end of 2024 because, as Marketplace's Megan McCarty-Carino reports, EU regulations are basically shaping technology right now.
On issues from data privacy to content moderation, as Europe goes, so goes the tech industry, says Anupam Chander, a law professor at Georgetown.
The EU is basically the big dog of regulation.
Big tech may be a big punching bag in American politics, but actual legislation has deadlocked domestically. Not so in Europe, Chander says, partly because the companies are mostly American.
You can reach political agreement more readily when you're regulating companies that aren't your constituents.
The granddaddy of EU tech law has been the General Data Protection Regulation. There's also the Digital Services Act, which aims to counter false and harmful information online, and the Digital Markets Act to chip away at anti-competitive behaviors. Lawmakers are now finalizing legislation to take on artificial intelligence. Ivorna McGowan, director of the Center for Democracy and Technology's Europe office, says EU policies can push global change.
From just a practical sense, it often doesn't make sense just to change business processes or the way they operate for one region.
But as pressure from Europe ramps up, it's starting to threaten core business models the tech industry relies on, like targeted advertising or the walled gardens of app stores, says Eric Seufert, a tech analyst at Mobile Dev Memo.
Now I think companies are more reluctant to roll these changes out globally because the interpretation for some of these regulations has gotten so strict.
He says we're increasingly seeing the internet break down along geographic borders. Take Meta's so-called Twitter killer app, Threads, which still hasn't launched in the EU. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino for Marketplace.
You probably don't think much about this as you're driving about town running errands or whatnot, but the roads and highways beneath our wheels are paid for with taxes, gas taxes. A federal gas tax of 18.4 cents a gallon, unchanged, by the way, since 1993 and not indexed for inflation. And state gas taxes that vary by state. Alaska is the lowest. California is the highest. But the point is that the more fuel efficient that internal combustion cars and trucks get, and in particular, the more electric that vehicles get, the more states are getting worried about how they're going to pay for all those roads and highways. This month, Texas became the latest state to add an additional vehicle registration fee for EVs, $200, in the Lone Star State. Marketplace's Elizabeth Trovall has more now on how the increasing electrification of personal vehicles is paving the way for a new kind of taxes.
For anyone who isn't a big fan of the gas tax, MIT's Jim Aloisi has news for you.
Well, guess what? It's going to go away on its own because we're having this transition to electric vehicles.
Aloisi says state and federal governments should be experimenting with gas tax alternatives because they could be facing major losses.
$25 billion in lost transportation revenues every year.
Most states, Texas being the latest, have imposed some sort of flat additional registration fee for EVs to cover what the state isn't getting in gas taxes. Breanne Glover is with Texas A&M's Transportation Institute.
The difference is you get hit with that tax all at one time versus paying it out over the year per gallon as you use it. But it's supposed to be sort of a replacement dollar-wise.
A flat fee may even out on the government side of things, but Eric Mueliger with UC Davis says that for the driver,
that levying an annual fee on an electric vehicle is going to be much more expensive on a per mile basis for someone who drives that electric vehicle a little bit relative to someone who is putting lots of miles on that electric vehicle.
That's why Douglas Schenkel with the National Conference of State Legislatures says some states are trying out other models that charge per mile.
You could do it through an odometer reading. There are things that you can plug into your vehicle.
Another option, taxing kilowatt hours at charging stations, though Garrett Schroed with the Eno Center for Transportation says that has its pitfalls because
80% of electric vehicle charging happens at the home and not at public chargers.
Though he says it could be a good option for states that have lots of visitors. I'm Elizabeth Trovall for Marketplace.
We're going to turn from the tax code now to patent law, specifically the enforcement of patent law. And we're doing that because of a law review article I read the other day. I don't read many law review articles, but this one was pretty interesting. Seriously. And we're going to make it worth your while. Jenna Frelick of Fordham Law School wrote the aforementioned article. Professor Frelick, thanks for coming on.
Thanks so much for having me.
So as I said in the introduction, it is rare that I read a law review article. It is even more rare when I read one that makes me go, wait, what? And you started this thing in the Virginia Law Review by saying it is quite likely that you, the reader, have infringed a patent today. I'm a law-abiding person. What do you mean? What do you mean I've infringed a patent?
I'm sorry to tell you, but yes, you probably have, and you, the listener, probably have too. There are so many patents out there. They cover so many different things that it is practically impossible to get through your day without doing something that infringes on some patent.
Okay, so then why am I not getting sued every time I turn around?
Well, probably because it's not cost effective. So not speaking for you, but speaking for myself, costs a lot of money to bring a lawsuit, millions of dollars, hundreds of thousands at least. And for most people, there's no point. So the patent owners will let it slide. They also probably don't know you're doing it.
However, you say in this piece that artificial intelligence and technology may change that. And the word you use, I think, is salience, how patents are going to become salient again. Explain, please.
Technology is making it easier to find out about patent infringement, and it's making it easier to, in some ways, enforce patents. Used to be, it was hard to know what people were doing with their technology. Now, with the internet, you can search on Amazon to find all the product, if you're a patent owner, all the products that might infringe. So that's one example of technology.
You probably read more patents than I do, he says, tongue in cheek. How big a boon to you would it be as a woman whose job at least encompasses somewhat reading patents to be able to zip out ChatGPT or whatever AI of your choice and be able to figure out what's going on?
It makes a huge difference. Patents are quite terrible to read. They are long. There are dozens of pages, and they're written in this terrible legal language. I'm sorry, I'm a lawyer. I like it. But this terrible legal language that is very hard to read. And there are millions of them, and they're not standardized in any way, so they're hard to find. Even I can't read millions of patents, but artificial intelligence probably can. And so suddenly we have the technology to sort through, at least to some extent, this thicket of patents to pull out the ones that are more relevant to more easily find relevant patents.
This is a little abstract, but it seems to me the patent system works because nobody wants to wade into the thicket and the morass that is the American patent system, right? I mean, you got the high profile ones and all of that, but otherwise it's too costly and time consuming to enforce.
That's right. So right now, a lot of the way the current system works just depends on most people in most situations ignoring patents and ignoring patent infringement. I'll give you an example, which is there's a fairly well-known patent that was granted that covered a stick. Like the kind of stick you'd find on the ground that falls off a tree onto the ground that your dog or your child might pick up and play with.
Okay, you're going to have to explain.
So this was a mistake. This patent should not have been granted, but it did get somehow made its way through the patent office, and a lot of patents are granted by mistake. So there are a lot of patents, maybe not quite this silly, but there are a lot of erroneously granted patents out there. I stepped on a stick this morning. I kicked a stick. My four-year-old son picks up a stick every single time we go out and waves it around. Every time we do that, we are infringing on this patent.
Wow. That's all I can say. Just wow. So what do we do with this? I mean, it's literally in the Constitution. There's a whole agency in the government that's set up to grant patents and enforce patents. And yet, a stick.
And so this patent was eventually invalidated. Oh, all right. It was okay. Just such an obvious example of something that shouldn't be there. But most patents that should not have been granted, well, it also costs money to challenge a patent. And so they're out there. And if we suddenly took every patent seriously, we would have to pay a licensing fee every time we wanted to pick up a stick. That obviously becomes burdensome and cumbersome and poses a challenge to the way we do business right now. Yeah. The flip side, of course, is that small inventors maybe get more licensing fees than they otherwise have.
In the grand scheme of things, do you think the patent system works?
It works in certain circumstances in certain industries for certain companies. And then there are many, many, many ways in which it does not work at all.
Jenna Frelich, professor of law at Fordham University, talking about patents. Professor, thanks for your time.
Thanks so much for having me.
This final note on the way out today. Saw this on Axios this morning, thought it was interesting. New research from ADP, the private payroll people, that shows people who get promoted at work are more likely to quit, at least in the short term. ADP has access to a ton of data. So they looked at more than 1 million people at companies with at least 1,000 workers between 2019 and 2022 and found that 29% of people leave within a month of getting promoted. If they hadn't been promoted, only 18% would have left. Here's the key thing, though. After about 6 months, that spread narrows. And then after that, the people who didn't get promoted are slightly more likely to leave. All right, we got to go. Here is your moment of economic context. Don't look now, but oil, the U.S. benchmark West Texas Intermediate, up nearly another 2% today, closing in on $99.0 a barrel. Our digital and on-demand team includes Carrie Barber, Dylan Mietinen, Janet Wynn, Olga Oxman, Ellen Rolfes, Virginia K. Smith, and Tony Wagner. Francesca Levy is the executive director of Digital and On Demand. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.